when was the last time you were in an argument or a fight? But I feel like I know something about that fight, you know? And maybe the people you live with are so good, you guys never fight. Maybe one of you is pretending, or maybe you guys are just that good, but you must have heard of a fight, you know, or an argument between two people. And I want to make an assumption that might be quite accurate about that fight. Every fight, every argument often has something in common. The parties involved have an assumed right, have an assumed just. They somehow both know that there's a standard that should have been reached that wasn't reached. So it's often the parties are probably, one of them is probably being accused of not doing what was supposed to be done, of being unjust, and they're probably arguing, no, I actually reached the standard, or they're giving an excuse for why they couldn't reach the standard, or they're just saying, please forgive me, right? But you will never find them saying, forget the standard, I don't even think there is a standard, I could do whatever I want. Well, of course, there are a few people who would say that, but often you find people in an argument, somehow there's an agreed standard, even though no one is mentioning it. And the argument is, did you or did you not reach the standard? Somehow, people agree. You know, I met a friend who identifies as agnostic, and you know, and it's crazy. One of the questions that often people who are trying to feel safe about not believing in God, for some reason faith has been associated with a lot of fear, is always the question of life after death. And so we're trying to just have a few drinks, and they ask, hey, what about this life after death thing? Like, come on, you had to start with that? And anyway, it led us to the conversation of Adolf Hitler. And whether you believe in God or not, no one could dare argue that guy did a great job. He had his own standards. Now, we know that he had reasons he gave himself to excuse himself from the standard, but we all know there was a standard he didn't meet. No one argues otherwise, believers or non-believers. You know, last week was the memorial of September the 11th attacks in New York. And Kenya knows the pinch of terrorism. Right? August 8th, we know how it feels. August 8th was just a major one, but, you know, we know how it feels. We know how it hits our economy. But that's nothing compared to the lives it takes. And even those who support, even those who get involved, could argue that they have a reason to be excused, but they could never argue that there isn't a standard. They could never argue that there isn't a mark. They could give reasons why they wouldn't meet it, they don't want to meet it, but whether it's religious or not, they could never argue that there isn't a standard. Or let's bring it back home. When you are caught doing something wrong, when that email has been discovered, when you made that booking, knowing too well you shouldn't be going there in the first place, right? You know, when it happens another time and you had promised your husband, you had promised your wife, it would never happen. You were done. When you say something you know you shouldn't have said, somehow you just know that there's a standard that you've missed. And often, something people often say is, but nobody is perfect, right? You know what that means? When we say that nobody is perfect, we are actually saying that there is a perfect that nobody is. Man, I feel so cool, you know, just switching those up. You know, it points to something that we all instinctively know. Or as I like saying around here, our souls know something and they're trying to tell us. Our souls know something and it's trying to draw our attention to it. That there is a perfect. For every mess we see in the world, there is an unmess. Right? For every imperfection we see in the world, that's why we can identify the imperfection. That's why we can identify the mess. You know, the The drunk uncle who's a pain every family gathering, but the kids are laughing because you forced them to go anyway, so they're happy seeing your faces so cringing. Every time you see a mess in the world, every time you see a mess in yourself or a mess in your family, I think you can only identify that mess because something in us knows that there is an unmess. And that's what I want to invite us to start talking about in this coming Sundays. So let's pray. God, it just doesn't make sense to us at any point that you would have everything, but you still wouldn't want heaven without us. God, it doesn't make sense. We would never grasp. At least maybe not in this side of heaven, we would never grasp what it means that you came down. And so, Lord, we invite you to meet us again and again and open your word to us. Spirit of God, come do what only you can do. You know, we've all seen people in our lives and thought, what a mess, you know? And some might be in a relational mess. Some have made a mess of their finances, you know? But we can identify a mess. Or the flip side of that coin is, we've all made a mess of ourselves from time to time, you know? We've messed up our relationships. We've said something we know we shouldn't have said. We've responded in a way that we know we shouldn't have responded. We've been to places where we shouldn't have been. For some people, it's their marriages. They're in a mess, but they can't quite tell where the rain started beating. But they can identify the fact that it's in a mess, you know? Some people, it's an addiction they're trying to kick. And every time they promise themselves, they promise their families that this is the last time. And then it isn't. We all know what a mess is like, you know? And sometimes the messes we see in our lives are things we smuggled in from our past. You know that habit should have stayed in your last season. You know that habit should have stayed in your last relationship, but you smuggled it in. And it's creating a mess. Sometimes it's a mess you inherited. You know? You grew up with an alcoholic father, and that's the only life you've known. Sometimes you're just in a good place, but if you've lived long enough, you know that we're always coming out of a mess or one decision away from a mess. We all know what that feels like, you know? And a few months we were talking about offense and how we deal with that in the body of Christ. And I remember saying, offense is one of those things that you all get a chance to play, you know? I keep inviting us, that in the family of God we all get to play, and some things unfortunately are also like that. And being in a mess is one of those things. You all get your turn. You all get your turn, you know? And there's this idea, we all say, oh, there's always someone more beautiful than you and someone not as beautiful. You know, there's always someone ahead of you, there's always someone behind you. There's always someone with at least one shilling more and another one with one shilling less. Guess what? There's always someone who's in a more messier place than you. So that's great news. My point was, you're not alone. Interestingly, mess is what brings us together, you know? There's always someone dealing with something. There's always something God is dealing with in our lives, in our hearts. There's always a mess that we're being invited to see. And through seeing that mess, through identifying that mess, I believe they are a lens through which we see God. Because if you can identify the mess in the world, you're actually saying that there is an unmess. If you can identify the imperfection, you're actually saying that there is a perfect. Or otherwise, it shouldn't matter, right? It shouldn't matter. If there isn't a standard, then it shouldn't matter what people do. It shouldn't matter how people treat each other. But somehow our souls know that it matters, that there is different, that there is how we're supposed to act, there is who we're supposed to become. Why? Because our souls have a compass that keeps pointing to true north. If you can see the pain of a mother, caused by a mother who walked away from her family, then maybe you're this close to seeing God. If you can see the mess caused by corrupt politicians, then maybe we're this close to seeing God. Why? Because it's pointing us to somewhere. It's telling us that there is better, that there is perfect, that there is the unmess. And so I want us to read something that was written by this guy called Paul. Now, Paul was an apostle of Jesus. What that word means, because you know, you walk around town and you hear apostle so-and-so, apostle so-and-so, all that means is that they were sent. These were sent ones, you know? And so technically, I want to declare to all of you that you're all apostles. You've all been sent. Go into the world and declare the good news. Anyway, this was Paul's life. But before Paul, you know, when Paul shows up into the pages of history, he doesn't show up as the great Christian leader we know him as today. He doesn't show up as the guy who wrote all these beautiful letters to churches of the first century that we have in the New Testament. He doesn't show up as this neat follower of Jesus. He shows up as someone who hated believers with a passion. He pursued them and arrested them, which would often lead to them being murdered. That's who Paul shows up as in the pages of history. And he had a powerful encounter with Jesus that transformed his life. Imagine someone going to a city to kill the followers of Jesus, or at least to arrest them. He meets Jesus, and in that moment he asks, "Lord, what do you want me to do?" That's how powerful it was. That's how powerful it is when finally you see the unmess. It changes us completely. So he then starts planting churches and traveling throughout their known world, speaking about Jesus, even to people who believed like him that the followers of Jesus should be killed. And here's an excerpt from a letter he wrote to the church in Rome. "Now, we know that whatever the law says, it says to those who are under the law, so that every mouth may be silenced and the whole world held accountable to God. Therefore, no one will be declared righteous in God's sight by the works of the law. Rather, through the law, we become conscious of our sin." Okay, so let's just slow that down and break it down a bit. And so it's starting with the first line of the excerpt. "Now we know that whatever the law says, it says to those under the law." And all this statement means is that it's going to be one of the ones I was so proud of doing. So all this statement means is that if you're under a law, it is because that law is above you. Got it? Man, I'm really trying this morning. So if you're a citizen of a country, and that country has a constitution, you are bound by those laws. And that country has a set of laws, you're bound by those laws. Now, a citizen of another country is not necessarily bound by those laws. That's what Paul is saying, that the laws that bind you are the laws that are above you. And in this particular context, he was talking about the law of God. And for the Jews, that was the Torah, the what we find in the Old Testament. You know, all those things that they were told to do and not do. He's actually referring to the law of God. That everything it says because you're under that law. If you're a believer, Jesus gave one commandment. This is my commandment, right? And he invites us to keep it. That you will love others as he has loved you. So he's talking about that too. Okay, and I acknowledge that some of us are, you know, you probably came here because she invited you or he invited you, and this is not your jam, and you just, you're here, listen, and it's okay. It's really okay to be there, wherever you are in this journey of faith. But here's the interesting thing. Even if you don't believe in God, you have the law of your conscience. You instinctively know who you're meant to be, how you're supposed to act, how you're supposed to respond. Why? Because the law of your conscience is above you. And whatever the law says, it says to those who are under the law. Interestingly, I want to invite you to the idea that the law of God is written in our hearts. You know, our souls know. Our souls know what we are in, what we are supposed to be, and therefore what we are not, right? Remember what I said at the beginning. When we are caught in a lie, when we're caught doing the wrong thing, often, you know, when you can't defend yourself anymore, you say, come on, but no one is perfect. Funny thing is, we use that line when we are caught. Come on, no one is perfect. Cut me some slack. But not when we catch others. When we catch others, we want to tell them, we want to read them the law. We want to tell them how they should have behaved, how they should have acted, how this was so beneath them or so beneath humanity. We can't even understand how they went that law. How they went that low. What are we saying? Here is the law, you should have kept it. But when it's us, we're like, oh, come on, no one is perfect. I find it funny because in politics it's so blatant, you know. When the politician you don't like is caught doing something they shouldn't be doing, like they are almost always caught because they're human too, we always say, ah, the Antichrist. I told you guys, these people will lead us down the wrong path. But when it's a politician you like, come on, guys. He is just a human being. No one is perfect. See, this is exactly what Paul says actually later on. All have sinned and fallen short. Every one of us, you know? And that's why we can identify that no one is perfect. Look at what he continues to say in that line. So now, whatever the law says, it says to those who are under the law, so that every mouth is silenced. And all are held accountable to God. So that every mouth is right before you're about to point a finger and say, ah, caught you this time. If you think about it, you're silenced. Why? Because just last week you went saying, come on, no one is perfect. Right about the time you're about to say, yes, that's a wicked person, they're the most evil people in the world, you're stopped in your tracks because you realized you're silenced too. Why? Because you couldn't be what even, you know, forget the Bible, forget Jesus. You couldn't be the version that you expect yourself to be. The standards you hold to yourself, you couldn't keep them. So somehow it silences us. For all have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God, you know? And for believers, it's the life that Jesus is inviting us to. All of us have never hit the mark. And think about it. Let's just say you could do your best and never make a mess of yourself again. What are you going to do about all the other times you've made a mess of yourself? You couldn't wish them away. So still, you didn't meet the mark. You know, and just that word glory is a word we don't use often anymore. But we're talking about the brilliance, the perfection, the holiness, the beauty of God. No one has ever met the standard. You know, I do not love people as well as I should. Heck, I don't even always do the right things. You know, you're supposed to walk away from that relationship. You know too well, but you're still there, you know. You're supposed to treat your husband better than you're treating him. You're supposed to pay your employees better than you're paying them. somehow when we finally see the Lord, we are silenced. When our souls remind us what we were supposed to be, we are silenced. Because we're all held accountable to God. But you will never do the right things up to perfection. You will never, as I said, even if you stop now, what do you do about all the past mistakes you've done? But here's the honest truth, you never will. You know? You will never do the right things until all you could hear is, great job, look at you. So why do we have the law? Why do we have this conscience? Why do human beings have this sense that there is just, that there is right, that there is perfect, that there is an unmess? Why would it be there if we could never on our own meet the standard? Here's how Paul concludes. He says, now, whatever the law says, it says to those who are under the law, so that every mouth is silenced and the whole world is held accountable to God. Therefore, no one will be declared righteous in God's sight by the works of the law. You will never. And it's unfortunate that sometimes people peddle that idea, that if you did well enough, that if you gave to the poor more, that if you came to church a bit more, that if you just increased your tithes and offerings, that if you, sometimes people peddle that idea, that you know what, you could do something that will make you get counted as righteous. And Paul says there's no one who will be declared righteous in God's sight by the works of the law. Rather, through the law we become conscious of our sin. And that's the whole idea. That every time your conscience is telling you, that's not how you should have responded. It's telling you who you are not. And it's giving you a lens to see that there is an unmess. Every time you wake up and see a mess around you that you created, that you inherited, that someone created and now you're part of it, every time you can see that, you're being given a lens to see that there is an unmess. That there is a perfect. And you see, every time we say, but no one is perfect, we are acknowledging that there is a perfect that no one is. Then the unimaginable happened. See, in the times of Paul and before that, and quite frankly, even now, every time people imagined God, they imagined an angry man who has been so offended, who has been so hurt, who has what's the phrase I want to use? What do you call someone who's easily offended? There's a nice phrase. And now it's gone. You know, every time we think, you know, God is so easily offended, and so he's just walking around angry, waiting for, okay, whom do we punish today? You know, the image of God sitting in a white cloud, very angry, waiting. Oh, you've done it again. You know? Think about the number of times you've heard people say, yeah, I heard they were sick. You know, she insulted her mother once. This is God's punishment. How many times do you hear that? How many times do you see people suffer and someone is saying, yes, yes, yes. This must be, God must be on their case. God must finally be teaching them the right lesson. Poor them. How many times have you heard conspiracy theories about things that have happened to nations or cities? You know, oh man, September 11 was a big one, right? Like everyone's, yeah, you see the buildings were the buildings and that because, oh, the president was this. This must be God punishing this nation. You know, when Soleil Dam broke and really took lives, how many people are saying, yeah, we know what happens in that area. These people are drunkards. These people, oh, man, finally the punishment. somehow people are stuck with this idea that God is just waiting to punish. So we got one part right, that every time we see the mess, it invites us to see the unmess. It gives us a lens to see God. And so the unbelievable, the unexpected happened. That God saw the mess, God knew the mess, God knows you are a mess, and instead of being moved to anger and judgment, he's moved to compassion. Quite the unexpected. They didn't expect it then. People still don't expect it now. We have all drawn our lines, especially lines that we haven't crossed yet. You know, if it's like, oh yeah, I just messed up one financial year, but you know, God forgives. But that line that everybody, you know, your brother has crossed and you haven't, you're like, but that, how could they do that? I once realized that everything I haven't done, it's because God is holding on to me. I couldn't help it. Everything I haven't done, it's like, thank you, Jesus. Another day has ended, and I behaved myself. Because God is holding on to me. But we always have this line that, come on, no one expected that God's response would be compassion. And this is exactly why Jesus came. You know, it is what the most famous verse in the Bible actually talks about. For God so loved the messy you, the messy me, this messy world. And I want you to think of the worst. And I promise you, someone has done worse than you thought of. I want you to think of the worst thing you have done and you're thinking, but come on, this at this point I went too far. And I promise you, even at that point, these words remain true. That for God so loved the messy you, the messy me, this messy world, that he gave. He was moved to compassion. He was moved to compassion. That's why I said it's the mess that brings us together. It's the mess that allows us to sit here together. Essentially, we're gathered because God identified how messy you are. So what's the mess reminding you of? You know, was it yesterday evening? Or was it last financial year? Or was it your last employee? Or was it your last marriage? What is the mess reminding you of? What invitation are you hearing today? Could you see God responding to you in compassion and mercy? I think so many people have trouble receiving grace, and so many people have trouble giving grace because they aren't sure that they themselves have been met by God in compassion. You are as hard as you are to yourself, to everyone else around you. Why? Because you are not sure that God is done forgiving you. One of the songs I really loved growing up was the song called Times, and one of the lines says, are you done forgiving? Are you done forgiving? I'm tired of pretending. Look at what I have become. Look at what I have become. And maybe that means before you criticize, before you say, oh, what a mess you are and you are such trouble, try compassion. Even with yourself, try compassion. Remember that you have been given compassion and you're still receiving compassion. So try compassion. Remember that you are a mess and you were a mess and you still are a mess and God still gives you compassion, so try compassion. When I was a young boy, and if people would hurt me or do something wrong, I would run to my knees and say, God, you saw them. You saw them. Why? Because, you know, partly it's because what most of the church, what something we People who are with jobs like mine have always said is that you are the best of the best. God is on your side, and God is going to make your enemies fall on the right. And so you're calling fire from heaven, burn them. And then as I grew older, I started realizing what a mess I was. As I grew older, I started realizing that I have hurt a lot of people. As I grew older, I started realizing that my character was flawed. And so when someone would hurt me, I would just be so mad at God to begin with. Because I'd say, I know you will forgive them. I know you will. Do you know how I knew they would be forgiven? Because I knew I was forgiven. Somehow I still always felt the closeness of God. I still always knew he was with me. I had seen the messy me, and it pointed me to the unmessed Jesus Christ. And I knew I was forgiven. I had no reason enough to give him when I wanted to pray against all those people who hurt me. And by the way, that is how my teachers survived, you know? Where does that leave us? It should draw us to compassion. Draw us to a place of compassion. The awareness that mess is common to all of us should remind us that we maybe should be compassionate with each other. You know? And you know too well that if they continue drinking as they're drinking, they will mess their life up. You know too well that if they continue talking to their wives as they do, they will lose them. You know too well that if they continue going where they keep going, they will lose themselves. You know too well. But just before you criticize and you call them names and you ostracize, maybe try compassion. I think Paul was echoing something that Jesus had said right before you're busy taking the speck out of your brother's eye. Take a look at the mirror, and maybe this mirror would be the law now. Maybe this mirror is your conscience. And right before you're busy saying, come on. Realize how much in need of grace you are. But don't forget the good news ever. That God did not respond in anger. Instead, he moved in compassion. That no one ever imagined that God would come close, let alone get into the trenches of our mess with us. Guess what? That is the news. So would you dare accept God's compassion? And for some of you, it means stepping into faith for the first time. For some of you, it's amazing how many people have walked away from God because they've seen a messy world. And interestingly, they often are mad at God. Like, okay, if God didn't exist, why are you mad at him to begin with? Somehow they've seen the unmess, and they're blinding their eye to the unmess. So they're saying, but if God was there, so they're saying, if perfect was there, then how could this happen? And some of them are really just struggling with whether they are forgivable. So for some of you, it might be stepping into faith. For some of you, you have stepped into faith, but there's all this other stuff that you keep holding on to because you are not too sure that these are the kind of things God responds to in compassion. Would you dare accept God's compassion? I want to invite the band back on stage as we finish. Thank you.